Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Daniel Foster, news editor at National Review Online, and for Jim Garrity today, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Dan, what a difference a debate makes as we head to martini number one here. We're just getting the first whiff of polling after the Wednesday night debate between Mitt Romney and President Obama. Scott Rasmussen polling both in Ohio and Virginia. He's got the challenger now, Mitt Romney, up by one in Virginia, 49-48%. That's a state where just about every poll had Obama ahead outside the margin of error. In Ohio, it's a little bit more complicated. The president still has a lead. It's very slight, but among people who are absolutely certain who they are voting for, Mitt Romney has a three-point lead. For those not so sure, Obama still is the favorite among them, so it could be very, very tight. But the other good news out of Ohio is that absentee ballot requests for early voting way up for Republicans compared to 4 years ago. So all the hand-wringing that was going on just a few days ago certainly has turned around in a very nice way.
Yeah, you know, I should caution. I think Rasmussen is a good pollster, a credible pollster, and basically others have pointed out he's got one theory about what the electorate will look like on election day, and most of the other polls have a different theory. They expect record Democratic advantages in terms of turnout. So we'll see who's right. But you know, we should also note that the RCP average, which is a poll of polls, has Obama's lead in Virginia down to right around a half a point, less than a half a point. And I've said for a long time that I think that if Romney is within the statistical margin of error, if he's polling within 2 or 3 points, preferably 2 points of the president the day before Election Day, that he'll go in and win a squeaker. And definitely, I think the debate wasn't itself a game changer, but it opened up some turf, some territory for Romney to maneuver. I think he's going to have similarly solid second and third debates. He can't have a letdown. It's going to be a tall order for him. But I think he can probably pull that aspect of it off. And he's, you know, frankly, he's going to have to see President Obama challenged by something external, I think, in the next 30 days to really solidify his shots at winning. But he's got a real path now, and that's something something we weren't saying even a couple of weeks ago with much confidence.
Yeah, I didn't really expect to see a massive swing of, you know, even a few percentage points of people who were in the president's camp all of a sudden deciding to vote for Mitt Romney. I was more expecting to see, you know, some Obama supporters who are tentative drop back after that performance, or maybe people who are on the fence lean a little bit towards Mitt Romney, to see both directions happening just a smidge is encouraging. But it looks like Mitt's picking up more than Obama's falling back. So we'll,
One other thing, too, is that there was a Reuters Ipsos poll yesterday that was more of a mixed bag for Romney. But one thing that was in it that was good, I guess, that surprised, well, definitely good, but it surprised me, was that I haven't necessarily agreed with the idea that this is going to be a base election about base turnout. But the Reuters poll showed that Romney picked up a lot of support from Republicans after the debate, which, if this is going to be about base and base turnout, is also a good thing for him. I don't think that's where his margin of victory is going to come from, but certainly he needs every Republican to get out and vote.
On to martini number two now, Dan. And until this month, if you looked at every jobs report that came out, or just about every jobs report that came out over the past 4 years, what was the line from the White House?
You shouldn't invest too much in any individual jobs report. They don't mean anything individually.
Narrative over. Narrative over. This is now, this one jobs report from September means that everything has been solved, although when you look at the details, nothing has been solved. Liberals rejoicing today, thinking they've retaken the momentum in this race as a result of the overall unemployment rate dropping to 7.8%, down 0.3%, the lowest since the same month Obama took office. 114,000 jobs created in the month of September, which isn't enough to keep pace. So people are scratching their heads and wondering, how could this happen? Former GE chairman Jack Welch thinks it's a conspiracy from the Labor Department. Jim Pathakoukas over at AEI is not buying into the conspiracy theory. He says if you just look at the fact that there were apparently 600,000 more people forced into taking part-time jobs in the last month, then that's what we're seeing here. He says the overall U6 unemployment rate, which factors in part-time workers who would rather have full-time jobs and people who are abandoning the labor force, has not changed. That's still at 14.7%. Wages, when factoring in inflation, are stagnant or even worse. And so this pickup in income is a little bit of a charade as well. So while obviously jobs created is better than jobs lost, Dan, it's not nearly the rosy picture the media and the Obama campaign would have us believe today.
On the empirical side of things, it's funny that now we're seeing all these pundits on both sides explain to people the difference between the household number, the unemployment rate, jobs added, explain all these little granular details about the jobs report when, you know, for the last 43 months, we've noticed that, you know, the unemployment rate might go up when there is a big jobs creation month, because people are entering the workforce for counterintuitive reasons. These phenomena are not new, but it's interesting that now all of a sudden everybody's paying attention and the mainstream media wants to pick apart these fine-grained details and understand, you know, ways to make it sound, better for their guy. On the political side, I said this yesterday, that really the two things that would determine retroactively how important Romney's debate performance were the Friday jobs report, which we saw today. And I said, if it was good, it gave the Obama campaign a change of subject. If it was bad, it gave the media a reason to reinforce the Romney comeback narrative, which I think, but you know, this isn't necessarily a popular opinion on the right, but I think the media has incentives to tell a Romney comeback story. I think it's better for them than an election that's already over. Don't get me wrong. I think they're rooting for their guy, but I do think they have incentives to paint a Romney comeback narrative. Anyway, we saw a good jobs report superficially for the president, but it's also about, you know, the criminality of the low expectations at this point for job creation when we're cheering a 7.8% unemployment rate. And as you put it, the U6 rate still much, much worse than that. And all other sorts of indicators, really, really bad. Manufacturing, durable goods orders, all that stuff still really bad. But you're right, this is going to be painted as a victory and a subject changer for the Obama campaign. But you know what? What else is new? This is the life we have chosen, Greg.
Certainly the case. And but of course, the way this works is that the president will get a ton of media attention for this, and most people probably won't be reading blog postings from think tanks on this. And so it's going to be easy for folks to believe that this is bearing out what Obama's been saying about this slow trajectory back, even though the numbers deeper inside don't bear that out. So whenever we're a little bit alarmed by news that is not as good as it seems and could still help the president, we get Joe Biden. Joe Biden here in the third martini. He spends a lot of time here. And Joe Biden was campaigning yesterday, and he basically admitted what the campaign has been admitting all along, that they really only have one idea for a second term if they're reelected, and that's to raise taxes on the wealthy. But nobody puts it quite like Joe Biden.
We're going to ask, yes, we're going to ask the wealthy to pay more. My heart breaks. Come on, man. You know the phrase they always use? Obama and Biden want to raise taxes by $1 trillion. Guess what? Yes, we do, in one regard. We want to let that $1 trillion tax cut expire so the middle class doesn't have to bear the burden of all that money going to the super wealthy.
Okay, two quick points here, one far less serious than the other, Dan. First of all, with a come on, man, I assume if Biden loses, he'll be trying out for Monday Night Countdown to go on that segment, if anybody knows what I'm talking about. And secondly, what he said at the very end, so the middle class doesn't have to bear the burden of all that money going to the wealthiest Americans. It's as if it's the government's prerogative as to, you know, decide who gets to keep what, which is obviously the way they look at this, not that you earned it, you get to keep it, and we're going to take it from you, that type of debate. But he really thinks it's his money.
The point essentially comes down to, well, somebody's got to pay the Chinese, and we're going to decide who it is, you know, rather than maybe we shouldn't have borrowed $5 trillion from the Chinese under your watch. You know, I mean, maybe that's the way to do it. Liberals always play this game with tax cuts, tax increases, tax decreases. They've gotten very good at massaging the English language to make their policies sound like they are geared towards reducing taxes on the middle class. There's a lot of problems with it. One, when the president talks about something like he says on the stump, he said at the debate that he's cut taxes on the middle class 16 times. He's talking about weird one-time things and the stimulus bill. He's talking about tax credits. He's talking about checks that he sends out. You know, this isn't a real live tax cut, but they've gotten very, very good at massaging the language to make it look like they're all for the middle class. And on the flip side of that, when you're talking about the super wealthy, everyone has this picture of Warren Buffett in their mind when we're talking about who's going to pay the brunt of these this tax hike. But as Rami, I think, very effectively pointed out at the debate, there's a lot of small businesses who are taxed, who suffer under the Obama administration's proposal to let the Bush rates expire. So, you know, this is nothing new from Biden. It reminds me of the time when he said, "You're telling me we got to spend money to save money?" Yeah, that's what I'm telling you. You know, he thrives on the counterintuitive, and he thrives on the kind of spectacle of saying the unlikely thing and just assuming that his raw, you know, animal magnetism and charisma will transmit the deeper truth.
Joe Biden and raw animal magnetism. I think that's the first time I've ever heard those concepts in the same sentence. And
what else would you call that thing on his head?
Touche. Dan, have a great weekend.
You too, Greg.
Dan Foster of National Review Online. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Jim Garrett and I will be back on Monday for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.